COVID-19 patients need your help.
If you've fully recovered from COVID-19
or unknowingly been exposed to it,
you may have the antibodies that could help COVID-19 patients recover.
Donate blood and receive testing for COVID-19 antibodies.
Visit Vitalant.org today to schedule an appointment to donate blood.
That's Vitalant.org. Help save lives and schedule your appointment at Vitalant.org.
You could help save lives.
A different future starts with you. That's why GoDaddy does more than help you find a name. You can create, sell, and get found online so any small business can make a change. We need a new generation of thinking, your way of thinking. Start different at GoDaddy.com.
This is an ode to Napa cabbage. Of all the cabbages on all the cabbage farms, only you have the crisp crunch worthy of our Bibigo Korean dumplings. No other cabbage would do, because no other cabbage tastes like you. We love you, Napa cabbage. Just don't tell Green Onion. Napa cabbage, one of many obsessively crafted ingredients in every hearty, flavorful Korean dumpling from Bibigo. Go handcrafted. Go Bibigo. Authentic Korean dumplings now in the freezer aisle.
This is Podco Media Networks.
It's the Innovation Podcast with Mark Reed Edwards and Garnett Harriman. Let's start the show.
Garnett, we are back with another episode of the iPod. How are you doing?
Doing well. How are you doing today?
I'm all right. Well, so one area where we've seen lots of technology, but maybe not much innovation, is education. Our guest in this episode is aiming to change that. Do you want to introduce Moira Kelly?
Sure. Moira Kelly and I are connected on LinkedIn, and I was very, very fascinated by her career in the context of what we try to highlight here at the iPod Innovation Podcast. And I know a little bit about her background from her bio. She has a stellar education, and she looks like she's collected multiple degrees from places like Bowdoin and Bentley, and I'll let her fill in the rest of that. And she has a global perspective. It looks like she was also a Rotary Ambassador and Goodwill Fellow at the University of Nottingham, which strikes a chord with me. I spent a part of my academic career at the London School of Economics, and there's two or three other things on here that I'm not going to get into at this moment. Suffice it to say, she's had a stellar academic career and had gone on to be the president of Explo, a fascinating organization that I think it's exploration. Learning by exploration is the best way to describe it. And that's their philosophy, and they have a set of proprietary programs and perspectives, and I think that may be the best segue to saying, hello, Moira, how are you?
Hello, I am well. Thank you for having me on the show.
It's good to have you here, Moira.
Thanks for being here, and thanks for being so receptive to our outreach. You know, you hit on a lot of hot buttons for us, and I'm fascinated to jump right into this discussion, but I think we owe our audience a little bit of a backstory, you know, maybe more insightful than my glossy coverage of your education, your background, and your, you know, sort of path to being where you are now.
Well, sure. So, yeah, I went to college. I went to Bowdoin College, and I studied at the University of Nottingham. I also studied at the National University of Ireland, and I was a Rotary Fellow, but I was really lucky after college to get something called a Watson Fellowship, which allowed me to travel for an entire year working on a project, an anthropology project in Canada. And I lived in some fishing villages, and I lived in a nunnery, and I interviewed lots of people.
Nunnery as in get me too? Really?
Yes, I did. Yeah, it was fascinating. A French one, by the way. So, you know, and it was a fabulous year of following my curiosity. And then that year was followed up by going to law school at Boston University. And it was partway through law school that it became pretty clear to me that I did not want to be a lawyer, but I am a practical person, and I finished law school, and then I went into working in schools, and then I started working at Exploration. And so I've been doing that for a long time. And I, in general, am definitely of the notion that the more kind of exploration and adventure that we can bring to schools and to learning, the better all of us are going to be.
Very cool. So now some of the alignment and my original thought process when I was making the outreach to you is starting to come cascading back onto my rapidly aging brain. I have a couple of investments in tech companies that promote play. And they use technology to promote physical play and physical exploration with kids versus just video games and, you know, mobile games and stuff like that. Yeah. And I remember thinking, one of the questions I absolutely must ask you, and it doesn't have to be now, but I definitely want to explore the relationship and or differences between exploration and play. And we can talk about that now, or we can save that for later, whatever you want.
I'm happy to chat about it now. I think there's some really interesting research that's come out around play. And
not just for kids. Not just for kids, right? We're talking
adults, right? Absolutely.
I mean, the benefits for grown-ups are very little known at this point, but clearly somewhat important, right?
Yeah, and I think what happens a lot is people go like, oh, play, it's just not that important. But the research that's coming out is that play is incredibly important. So, you know, one of the things to think about is, I think about it, you know, kids playing ball, for instance, or playing tag or something, right? Very, very basic stuff. But if you recall back when you were a kid doing that and you really got into it, you know, time just flew by. And part of the reason it flew by is because you were probably in a state of flow where the challenge of the game was pretty well aligned with what your skills were. And it was a really collaborative process, right? Because kids really don't like to play with other people who hog the ball and aren't engaged in the back and
forth. I have that feeling about Mark Reed Edwards constantly. I have to tell you. constantly.
Yeah. All right. But so you want to be engaged with other people and social, but you don't really know what's going to happen. And that's one of the great things. You're uncertain. And one of the things that I think is really interesting now, looking, you know, because I'm an educator, so I have to kind of be looking forward. What are kids going to, and what are adults too going to be confronting in the future? And we're looking at this fourth industrial revolution and this VUCA future. And if you don't know what VUCA is, that is an age, I kind of call it the age of anxiety, but it's where there's lots of volatility and uncertainty and complexity and ambiguity. And it really makes people anxious. And
wait, just for the record, what age is that?
Well, you know, I think that we're, you know, now confronting a future that's pretty different than what we looked at in the past.
Or a present, in fact.
Oh, absolutely, right? And I think that play, if we take the elements of play and why that works so well, it actually allows people to become more comfortable with uncertainty. And so there are elements that we can take from play experiences and move them into the education realm to actually help us develop skills that will serve certainly kids well going into the future. So there's interesting stuff cropping up now that we hadn't really taken seriously so much in the past, but I think it's pretty interesting stuff.
For sure. And I want to go back to this because I can tell we're going to have one of these conversations that's going to be so ripe and full and fairly organic, but I do want to put some structure on this. So can you give the audience like a formal definition or your definition of what exploration learning is? That's a new phrase for me. I mean,
well, let me step back a little bit and tell you what exploration learning is. As directly, we're actually a not-for-profit company. We've been around for 42 years, and we started our work in summer learning, and we were a pioneer in that when at the time, basically, it was go to traditional summer camp or go to summer school. And we kind of merged those two things. And we came up with summer programs where there were no grades and no tests. And it really was about learning for learning's sake. And now we offer hundreds of courses and workshops where students can explore their interests. And they're really hands-on and interdisciplinary. We do loads of projects and trips. And basically, what we're trying to do is get kids, when I say kids, starting in grade 2 all the way up to grade 12, students to try things and do things they wouldn't do at home or at school. And so every summer, we've got students coming in from about 93 countries and across the U.S.
Wow.
And
I had no idea. I had no idea you had that kind of scale. Kudos to you. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a lot of kids to pick up from the airport, I'll tell you. And the thing of bringing people in from all over the place really is important to us, because when you mix up people from really different backgrounds, they just approach the world pretty differently. And at the heart of what we do, we're really about exploring the world of people and ideas and yourself, and trying to find your strengths and how you might use those to build a meaningful life for yourself. And part of what I would say is in our DNA is entrepreneurship and innovation. And it's a really creative environment. And I'm not going to take credit for it, but to give you some notion of the kinds of people who are part of our community in the past few years, more than 40 of our alums have been named to the Forbes 30 Under 30 list.
Great.
So that's kind of...
Don't we have one of those in our network, Mark?
I'm not sure. Do we?
That guy, John Chang.
John Chang.
Oh, John Chang. Yeah.
John Chang's one of our guys.
The podcast host.
Yeah.
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 Yep.
Yeah. And John, I should tell you, is actually on my board of trustees.
Oh, so I had no idea. Yeah. I had no, when I reached out to you, I had no clue. I knew that you and I were connected somehow. I didn't quite peg it to John, though.
John is one of those, I can't think of another way to describe him other than go-getter. I mean, man, he and I talked a couple of times on my podcast, The Confessions of a Marketer, in the last year. And then on the side, we started talking about him hosting a podcast for us. And he came in with a plan. I mean, he's one of the most organized people I've ever met. It was just wonderful.
Isn't this where you give a shameless plug for maybe Moira doing her own podcast at some point?
I was going to wait until a bit later.
What the hell
podcast.
For?
Well, let me tell you where we've moved. So we do this summer program, but then a few years ago, we started having schools and foundations visit us, and they basically said, we want some of that. So we started working with schools and foundations and to bring, I don't know, the magic of what we do. And the magic really, I think, is a lot of it's high engagement and participation in learning. And we started doing that, curriculum development and teacher professional development. And then we started doing organizational change management and executive coaching and project design.
I'm loving this spectrum, by the way. This spectrum, everything that I personally hate about education, you guys are like the opposite of it.
Schools are like, if the answer was just sort of like, just change that one teacher, it's great. But these are systems and they're complex and there are lots of reasons why they don't work, right? And so we've been doing that. And then last fall, we found ourselves in India and we were training some government teachers over there. And then in January, we got invited to present at the Education World Forum in London. And
so cool.
Yeah. So it's some nifty stuff that we've been doing recently.
If you've recovered from COVID-19 or unknowingly been exposed to it, you may have antibodies that could help COVID-19 patients. Donate blood and receive testing for COVID-19 antibodies. Visit Vitalant.org today.
Would you say that you've transcended the bounds of being a, sort of an educational nonprofit and that you're, you know, based on your org-to-org and your global org-to-org type work as it's evolving, are you more of a think tank? You know, when people...
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, some people have said that. It's funny. So we've been described as a think tank. We've been described as a consultancy. And then on Friday, somebody said, Moira, oh my gosh, you're like IDEO for schools.
Oh. And I was just... That's a good one.
Okay.
That's better than think tank.
We'll see if that pans out. So, yeah, so we've gone beyond what we were doing before, and we take a really strong systems orientation to things. And then I think the big thing is, right, I mean, every school is different, and you got to meet people where they're at. So some schools are reasonably far along on their innovation journeys, and then others really have not begun much. And you can't make this work go faster than it can go because you're dealing with human beings. So you have to be careful when you do it.
This is what really got me excited about what I was sort of reading between the lines when I was literally just reading the lines on your bio and the website and thinking about making this invite. So your journey as an organization and, you know, as a disseminator of this particular philosophy, you know, I refer to in shorthand as meta, right? You're getting more and more meta.
Yeah.
And so why I thought this was going to be exciting for Mark and myself and for the listening audience was that it's starting to be less about education, you know, like in the school sense, and more about things like you mentioned earlier. How do people deal with uncertainty? You know, how do people deal with change? How do people deal with all of the anxiety from all of these things? And what is it about exploration? What is it about hands-on that can be applied to, you know, even innovation in more of the space that I'm used to and Mark's used to, say, in technology or things like that? I mean, you're definitely moving towards like a much more of a meta perspective, it sounds like.
Yeah, I think we are in a lot of ways. And I think that, you know, I would say in some ways, you know, good teaching is good teaching, whether it happens in a school or, you know, it happens in a company or someplace else. And I think that what we're looking at is a future where it's really going to be essential that people are lifelong learners. So going meta so that people really start to understand what kind of learners they are and that they drive their own learning is going to be more and more important. And some of that's going to happen through technology and the opportunities that technology offers people. But in the end, I would say it's about human beings and that the more we can start to become more comfortable, I'd say, with discomfort. And that's going to be a key piece to moving educational institutions, as much as educational institutions are even going to look like they do now in the future. And I think what we're seeing is this, you know, just incredible change that's happening. And I'm hoping that schools, you know, 20 years from now are not going to look a whole lot like what they look like now, because if they do, we're going to have problems.
So if you quote my meta thing, you know, in your prospectus, just make sure and give me a footnote. Right?
I mean, I'll give you credit.
Really,
I'm pretty good
at like making stuff up, but I just want to make sure I'm getting some sort of credit for it somewhere. So.
Yeah, Moira, one thing, I have three kids and they're all grown up now, but they all went through public education and college and all that. And one thing that I observed even as long ago as 20 years ago is that there was confusion about what innovation in education really meant. Mm-hmm. And to a lot of people, it meant giving everybody access to a computer and then an iPad. But to me, it means being better at education rather than just saying, well, we've given them technology. Where do you stand? Obviously, technology is really important, but it's not really an answer. It's just like having a blackboard. It's a tool that you use in your classroom. Right. And often, I know that in one case, when I went to a parent-teacher night, the teacher in one of the classes was so proud that he was presenting to us on PowerPoint. Mm. And I thought, well, yeah, that's okay. You can learn how to use PowerPoint. But PowerPoint in corporations is not an answer. It's a tool.
Right, right.
And so much of what we've spent a lot of money on in the last God knows how long on technology has been masquerading as an answer when in fact it's just a tool.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, I was, well, you remember when schools, many of them decided, oh, you know, we get every kid a laptop and it'll solve all of our problems. And for a lot of schools, they simply became word processors of sorts, right? Because they were simply a tool. People too often, I think, on technology don't step back and say, why?
Yeah.
What are we aiming for? What are we trying to do? And then once you establish what your objective is, what is the best tool? And maybe it's a computer, maybe it's a technologically enhanced something or other, but maybe it's a pencil, you know, a piece of paper. And I don't think we ask why enough. What are we really aiming for? I think in the notion of what constitutes innovation, one of the definitions that we use a lot is something that is new and useful.
Yeah.
And the reason I use that phrase is at one school that might be very innovative, what constitutes new and useful there is not the same as what happens at another school that might be differently resourced and have different access, you know, in a whole host of ways to products or services or something else. And I think, again, what we got to go back to is what are we aiming for? And I think we're in this, you know, challenging period right now that we are still primarily assessing things, how well do people read in English and maths, and those are very important. But increasingly, what's coming out, World Economic Forum's putting this stuff out, is that you're going to have a different set of skills to thrive in the future. And we're only dealing with the development of those skills really on the periphery, and they're not coming into the core of schools. And the bottom line is, with the advancement of artificial intelligence, unless we start changing things pretty quickly, those we have to really hone in on what makes people human. What are the skills, emotional intelligence and collaboration, also, that computers are going to have a harder time dealing with? Because if it can be automated, it is, and it already is happening. But one of the big challenges, right, is loads of teachers know what to do or have some notion about what to do, but everybody, almost everybody's gone to school. And so it makes everybody an expert. And you kind of want to replicate what you already know and what your experience was, whether you're a parent or otherwise. And it can make change in these organizational management changes challenging.
So Moira, what are some of the highlights on your organizational journey from summer programs and that sort of stuff up to the kind of meta think tank work that you're doing with, you know, organizations and schools around the world now? Was there a clear turning point where it went from, you know, just programs to, you know, teaching organizations? Was there some sort of outreach that you did to make that change, or was it fairly organic?
Well, a couple different things. When I took over as president of Exploration, put a really big focus on training teachers for the summer. And so we started doing basically training up about 300 pre-service teachers every year. But I got this a random cold call. I don't even know when this was, maybe 6 years ago or so. Somebody called me up and said, "Hi, I've been looking at your website and we really like it. I am working for this small organization now that's being incubated by Teach for America." And essentially what we're doing is moving Teach for America teachers into summer camps that are part of community centers. So YMCA, Boys and Girls Club, that kind of thing. And what we're trying to do is stem summer learning loss, because for particularly for kids from low income backgrounds, they can lose up to 3 months worth of learning during the summertime. So, of course, it sounded lovely. But one of the things that I asked this person was, you know, if really what you're trying to do in the end is get kids' math scores and English scores up, that's all well and good, but we're probably not the people to work on your test scores. And I said, but if you want to light kids up about learning, and it probably, or at least there's a good chance, and it's going to raise their test scores, then we can do that. And they said, no, that's what we want. That's really what we want. So we worked with them a bit on some really interesting curriculum. And then they went to town and I went and visited. And when I was walking through one of the camps, and they were pretty excited relative to what had been happening, how improved things were, but all I could see were all of the problems. And they weren't related to the relationship between a teacher and the student per se. It was kind of more about the culture, and it was behavior management and discipline and all sorts of things. So they wanted to continue working, but I said to them, there were 7 camps. I said, if you want to continue working with us, you need to bring all of your camp leadership up to Boston, and you need to do it for 3 days because we have to do some training. And they came, and they were kind of suspicious, I have to say, and understandably so. What would these people who work with far more well-to-do kids going to be able to show us that's going to be actually useful? And so we did a lot of work, but one of the things that we really worked on was how you design an environment where students have a sense of agency and get to choose more of what they do. Because we have a belief that if students are really part of the choice of what they're learning, that they'll be more interested in it and they'll be more engaged. And the likelihood is then that your behavior problems start to drop. And they both were intrigued by this idea and thought it was a nightmare in terms of, but how do you actually do that in practice? And that took a lot of work, rescheduling, doing block scheduling, and how do you actually offer loads of things to kids at one time and then have them go off in different directions and actually be able to keep track of them, et cetera, et cetera. But it transformed what happened during the summertime. And they did, I mean, we basically became national design partners for them to help in this work. But in the end, you know, it was they who had to do the day-to-day work to make it happen. But we were able to play the role of coach and thought partner and designer with them, and they did it on their own. And really, in the end, for us, the aim here was not only to stem summer learning loss, but to get them to the point that they could do it themselves, that they could develop in-house capacity to keep this work going without us. And once we became successful doing that, it was pretty clear that if we can do it with thousands of kids there and remotely, that there was probably something to what we're doing. And I'd say that was probably one of our more transformational moments.
Important. And I think the phrase that I took out of that is the capacity building. That's a big, big thing in terms of, you know, going from sort of a worm's eye programmatic level up to that more meta org to org level, because you're conveying skills that basically people can then push, or organizations can then push down within their own organizational ecosystem. So that capacity building ends up being like a huge thing. What is the difference between, let's just call it a standard classroom and an Explo classroom? How would you characterize that?
Yeah, I would say that in an exploration classroom, there is a lot of dialogue. We do a lot of projects. It's action oriented. If you walked into an exploration classroom, it's quite possible you might not initially know where the teacher is. And because the role of the teacher at times is actually doing direct instructions. Other times it's coaching students. It's moving around in small groups. The kids are also actually teaching others too. And it is, as much as possible, when we are putting together projects and assignments and things, we try and put together the ability for students to make lots of choices in terms of the topics they're pursuing, the projects that they're going to do, how they're going to get assessed on things. I think it's fun. It's very experiential. There's a playfulness about what's going on in the classroom. But it's interesting because I'll give you an example of one course that we do. We designed this, seventh grade course on island planning, and it's an archipelago of islands. And kids, it's very interdisciplinary. So part of it is urban planning and architecture. It is government. It is human services. It's trade. It's business and also it's energy. And it's not unusual that we'll run that course in a block schedule for a couple of hours, and then it's a break, and the kids won't want to go out for recess. They just want to keep on working on their project because they've got other ideas about how, for instance, they're going to get energy from another island, but they've got to work out how they're going to plant because they've got to trade tin to somebody. They become very complicated, and you can immerse yourself in things. And I'd say that kids in general, if you set up the environment well and they care about what's going on, you make it relevant to their lives somehow, they want to learn and they want to really engage. But it does mean that a teacher has to give up some control of what's happening, because to some degree, the kids are in control.
All right, next time we'll be back with Moira as we delve more into issues around education, changing the nature of schools, and some projects Moira is working on. So come back then.
Thanks for joining Garnett and Mark on the Innovation Podcast. Visit theinnovationpodcast.co to subscribe and listen to other episodes.